This audio production is brought to you by TheBestDayEver.com, David Wolf's premium longevity member site.
The content found on TheBestDayEver.com from David Wolf and New Horizon Health, Inc. is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as treatment cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be construed as such, because that would be illegal. Always work with a qualified health professional before making any changes to your diet, supplement use, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. Please understand that you assume all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.
Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Lucian Gauthier, and I am here live with Truth Calkins. Truth Calkins is coming to us from Tucson, Arizona, and Truth is here tonight to talk to us about sugar and sugar alternatives, specifically stevia, which is really a phenomenal sugar alternative, non-glycemic sweetener that many of you are very familiar with in making your smoothies. So, Truth, thanks for joining us and talking to us about sugar, sweet, and what we can do to really optimize taste and health.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Lucian.
So, Truth, let's just get into the first part of the interview, which is why refined sugar or these heavy sweeteners that are used in a lot of processed foods, a lot of modern prepackaged foods, and even people who do like baking, you know, like my mom used to bake with refined sugar and butter and flour and the good old days of, you know, those kind of sweet goodies. Let's talk about why sugar and that glycemic cycle really harms our body and as it relates to insulin.
Okay, Lucian. Well, I think we got to go back in history here and define sugar to a certain degree. And, you know, sugar is like one of the first foods of life in mother's breast milk that nourishes us is high in lactose. And we develop a natural sweet craving at a young age to consume our mother's breast milk in order to nourish us and grow as babies into children. And this is natural and this is good. Now in our food kingdom, we have fruits and other complex sugars, carbohydrates and some starchy vegetables that are part of our plant kingdom. And they've been around for eons and they have nutrients in them, as well as the macronutrient or sugar carbohydrate. They have trace minerals and micronutrients. They also contain a lot of fiber, which allows the sugar to only be absorbed slowly in a certain way. So we have a balanced relationship, a healthy balance with sugar, up until we get into, you know, past our industrialized times and we get into modern times and we start processing food to make food at a larger level. We start changing things. We start taking out fiber. We start controlling and utilizing sugar more. When food becomes more profit-oriented, we start using sugar and different kinds of sugars. And just to, you know, go over some numbers about this, turn of the century, we consumed an average of 15 grams of sugar a day from food. Like World War II times, goes up to around 20 grams. Say 1980, goes up to like 30 grams of fructose. Fast forward here to like 1994, we're up to 55 grams of fructose a day for the average person. Now today we're up to 75 grams of sugar, a lot of that being fructose, high fructose corn syrup, which I'll mention a little bit later. That's about 25% of the daily calories. So according to the statistics, we all weigh, on average, every person in the Western world weighs 25 pounds more today than we did 25 years ago. Women are eating 335 more calories per day than they did 20 years ago. And so, like, we can say, like, where is all this coming from, all this sugar? Well, soda pop is a big one. If I had to just pick one for the modern masses. And one can of soda, you know, started, maybe it was a 6-ounce soda can before World War II, and then they came out with, like, a 10-ounce after World War II with the first vending machines. And then the 12-ounce and the 16-ounce, and now we're up to, like, the 20-ounce. You know, starting off with the original can of soda probably had 10 grams or 10 teaspoons of sugar per soda. Now we're looking at a lot more. So now, which there's something called the sweetener index, and there's different sugars have a different amount of sweetness. Like glucose which is a healthier sugar. That's the main sugar energy that the source that the body can use, is 75 on this scale. Sucrose, which is stronger sugar, that's half fructose and half glucose, that would be like in a glass of orange juice. Sucrose is 100 on the sweetener index. High fructose corn syrup is 120. And then crystallized lab fructose, which some people are using now, is 173, hypersweet. So high fructose corn syrup is something the Japanese invented in 1966. It hit the U.S. market in 1975. It's pretty much about economics. It's half the price of sugar. And sugar has, even when fructose came out and is still out, sugar has maintained pretty much the same price range. But high fructose corn syrup is so much cheaper. So it's been used in a lot of sodas. We get to like the early 80s, and the Heart Association starts telling people that we have to reduce eating fats, and we've got to go from 40% fat to 30% fat in our diet. So what do people do when they stop eating fat? Like when we look at all the fat-free cookies and other foods that came out, you'll see that the fat drops several grams on the nutritional fact sheet, but you'll see that the carbohydrates go up, some from more sugar in the food and some from more carbohydrates in general. And we're finding that these refined carbohydrates, especially because there's so much fructose in these foods, that the fructose converts into bad fats. About 30% of fructose turns to fat in the body. There's a whole host of things that fructose does that's not natural when you process it and you start consuming a lot of it. It increases uric acid production. It lowers your nitric oxide production. But this increase in fat is what happens is it's affecting the LDLs. Cholesterol. Now, most people don't know this, but they just, when they think about checking their cholesterol, think about LDL, and then they maybe think about HDL. HDL is good, and we want that up. We want the LDL to be pretty down. Now, the truth is you need to look a little closer because there's two different types of LDL, and they're hard to test separately. So most people don't test them or don't even know about them. There's two different particle sizes of low-density lipoprotein, of LDL. There's particle A, which is a large, buoyant particle, which is not damaging to the body. And there's particle size B, which is small, and it's dense, and it's heavy. And it's the one that gets trapped underneath the endothelial cells in with plaque, and it can be so dangerous. And most people don't know the difference between particle A and particle B with LDL cholesterol, and it's very hard to check. The best way, doctors say, to know the difference is to look for the markers. If your triglycerides are high and your HDL is low, that would indicate that of your LDL cholesterol, that the particle B, which is damaging, is going to be much higher, and the particle A, that's neutral, is going to be much lower. And the problem is with all the sugar and all of the cheap sugar, the high fructose corn syrup, which is in pretty much everything in the supermarket today, from bread to ketchup to mustard to just about everything. The fructose is actually 30% of it converts to these to bad fats, and it's going against the whole notion of the low fat diet that was, you know, so promoted from the 80s on. So this is, you know, a really interesting thing. We're consuming an average of 150 pounds of sugar a year, the average person. It's a lot of sugar, and I don't know how much of that is fructose, but I would say a lot of it is, like 75%. And fructose it's really quite toxic because the brain doesn't register it like another sugar. Like with glucose, your brain can register that you've had sugar. It'll send a message to the hypothalamus, and you'll know when to stop eating. You'll get central satiety, but you won't with fructose. The lower you consume it, the more the brain doesn't learn how to stop eating it. So we have this big increase in sugar, this big increase in carbohydrates that's going up and up and up. And we have a lot of doctors talking about what it's leading to. And one term that came out about 10 years ago that I like, a good word, is called diabesity. And this is a combination of the results of, you know, a lot of doctors' belief who are getting into the nutritional side of things today. It's caused coming from this excess sugar and carbohydrates. We have weight gain. We have increased diabetes. We have increased insulin resistance, increased metabolic syndrome, increased inflammation in the body. So obesity is not really a medical condition. That's why doctors don't really treat it, because insurance companies aren't going to pay for that. it's lifestyle. It's your choice. And, you know, most people are kind of like, well, if you're obese, it's tough luck. That's just your problem. And, you know, and a lot of people think, you know, it's just calorie per calorie. I have to stop eating. I have to eat less food and I have to exercise more to burn the calories. And that makes sense in a Petri dish, calorie in, calorie out. But when you look at the human body and the different types of foods we eat, the way our hormones react to them are different depending on the food groups that we consume. And it changes the way we store energy and the way we release energy and how we lose weight and how we gain weight. So, you know, our high sugar and carbohydrate consumption is really becoming an energy storage disease, according to some of the really pro doctors that are getting nutritionally oriented with lifestyle change using diet to combat these symptoms of diabetes and weight gain, increased heart disease and insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, inflammation. So food energy triggers production of insulin. So when we consume sugar and carbohydrates, we produce insulin from the beta cells in the pancreas, and then that helps the body regulate energy storage. And if we consume just modest amounts, we make some glycogen, and the body stores a certain amount of glycogen in fat and muscle tissue, and we use it for the quickest source of energy on demand to burn. The problem comes when we start consuming when we start consuming too much sugar, too much carbohydrates. It's the glycogen stores fill up quick, and then it turns over into energy storage, and it stores as body fat. And when this happens over and over and over again, the beta cells in the pancreas, they lose their sensitivity to the response, and they start making more and more insulin, and you're growing more and more body fat. So over time, as we continue eating more sugar, more carbs, and we keep hitting the beta cells in the pancreas to make more insulin, and we're taking in much more. I mean, this really comes down to the fact that we eat too much, and we have so much food available to us everywhere that we're overeating all the time. And because we don't know what kind of foods we're eating and how it affects us, a lot of it today in commercial food is so high in carbohydrate and sugar. So all of this excess food and so much of it being carbohydrate and sugar is hitting the pancreas over and over again, slamming the beta cells, just spurring the body on to make more and more insulin. And you're making way more than you need for glycogen stores, the energy output the average person has in their daily activity levels. So what is done with the excess energy? It has to go somewhere. It starts going to the secondary organ that you're growing, this body fat. And this body fat grows and grows and grows. And over time, you have a condition. Your fat is starving the rest of your body. And it requires so much energy to run that fat that it's sending messages for you to eat more food. And you're eating more food because it needs more insulin to run. And that insulin's going and storing more body fat. And you're getting into this loop. The medical doctors that really talk about nutrition, they call this the spiral of death because it's a loop that people can't get out of. And it's very, very addictive. And you lose that message to the hypothalamus to tell you when you're full, when you get into this loop. And when you're consuming more carbohydrates, more of them being from fructose, it makes it even worse. And it's a really difficult thing. Now, from my experience is what I found. I noticed weight loss. I noticed people who did have like type 2 diabetes. I noticed how these people responded so well to taking them off carbohydrates and sugar almost completely. And I learned this by accident through the body ecology diet. I got into the body ecology diet through Candida. I didn't have weight problems or you know, anything like this. I knew I overdid sugar and carbs at certain times and I didn't know why. And that was due to, you know, yeast cravings, but it's really, really big and connected with weight gain today and the average amount, the average person that eats so much sugar and so much carbs. So trying to break this is a tricky thing for a lot of people. Just exercising alone is not going to do it. You have to cut out the carbohydrates. You have to cut them down drastically. Now, if you are a really healthy person and you're not overweight and you exercise and you're active a lot and you've never lost your brain signals for how much food is the natural amount so that you can eat some sugars and you've never allowed candida to overgrow in your body by overdoing antibiotics and other things that can contribute to that, then you can eat healthy amounts of sugar and you'll make some glycogen and you'll usually make just enough to store energy from eating natural sugars like raw honey or some complex carbohydrates like whole grains, and some, a little bit of starchy vegetables like yams here and there, a little bit of fruit here and there. These foods also contain the fiber, which helps slow down the absorption. And you store just enough sugar that you have your glycogen for energy release. But today, when the food is processed and the fiber's out, and there's so much carbohydrates and so much sugar, so refined and designed to hit reward chemicals and taste sense effects in the body, that we start to eat more and more and more. And we start to live to eat, and we don't have enough activity to burn it off. The energy has to go somewhere. This is an energy storage condition. And it goes to growing the body fat, which is now going to tell you that you need more insulin. It's going to make you eat more food. And that you're basically going to lose the natural signal for hunger and appetite. You'll only feel satiated if you reach stretch receptor limit in the stomach, meaning if you eat until you're full and stuffed and your stomach is tight, then you'll finally say, okay, I'm done. I've had enough food. And at that point, the person feels like they have a bottomless pit. And all that food energy is going to insulin, which is going to feed the fat. And then when you're done, it wants more, and it's going to tell you to do it again, and it's a loop. Meantime, the vital organs of your body are being starved of true nutrition. And that's the vicious feedback loop that people get into that are dealing with weight gain today. So I learned inadvertently through the use of a very low carbohydrate diet and eliminating sugar completely, especially fructose, that we can break this cycle. And people go through a little die-off. The first 2 weeks, they can have like Carboholics Anonymous support is required. They have so much addiction that they're getting rid of. The feedback loop is coming back, you see. The sweetener I want to talk about today, stevia, I first heard of this from reading the Body Ecology Diet about 12, 13 years ago. And Donna Gates should get credit for this, I think, because from everything I've heard, she's really responsible for bringing stevia to this country. She's the author of the Body Ecology Diet and System of Healing. I first learned about it then. I was stopping all sugar from my diet and lifestyle abruptly after reading that book. And I tried making teas and adding a little stevia to her recommendation and found how potently sweet and how pleasant it was to like one of my favorite teas was American ginseng with cinnamon in it. It was a nice sweet, so it's slightly spicy tea. And just adding a few drops of stevia turned it into like a dessert treat for someone that's trying to wean out sugar and carbs from their lifestyle and they want a treat, you know, like a dessert after dinner or something. I'd make a cup of tea and use stevia. I also learned about stevia from South American herbs, from some of the Paraguay herbs from Brazil, trying to come to terms with fungal infections. I came across Pau de Arco. I came across the interloam strain of purple Apacho. This is the most powerful form of Pau de Arco, which is the tallest rainforest tree in South America, and it lives in a very moldy part of the world. It has very naturally antifungal compounds it releases to protect itself from its moldy, bacteria-ridden environment that it lives in. So the indigenous people have used the interloam shavings of the bark of this tree. They've used it since time immemorial as a health tea, and it's very anti-inflammatory because it's very antibacterial, antiviral, anti-infection throughout the whole body systemically. And I found the medicinal doses of that was a lifesaver with the amount of fungus and inflammation that I was dealing with. And I've used it at the tonic bar on and off for years. For healthy people, not much of a reaction, but for people who are dealing with systemic inflammation, usually caused in conjunction with systemic low-grade chronic infections like candida and things like this, it's like a miracle when they drink Pau de Arco. Not just one tea bag, it doesn't do anything. You have to saturate your body and drink large amounts. So I came across what they call honey leaf, and this is stevia. They used it in Paraguay for ages, and they would just take one leaf of stevia, or they would call it sweet herb in their language, and they would throw it into a whole gallon pot of yerba mate. Yerba mate is like the liquid vegetable of South America. It's their green tea. And it has a little caffeine, has matin, but it's very nutritious, very high in minerals and vitamins naturally occurring in yerba mate, but it's a little bitter. So they use stevia as a natural sweetener to combat the bitterness in their herbs like yerba mate. These herbs are so nice to learn how to use herbal teas like this. We're talking about a really healthy group of people in South America that actually ate mostly animal protein, cooked animal protein, a lot of it. That's a really acidic diet. That's a really high uric acid diet. But they didn't get gout and they didn't get, you know, health problems because they consumed so much tea. They consumed yerba mate constantly all through the day. Just like in southern China, they consumed magical grass, gynostemma. Yerba mate was the South American herb. And it's so alkaline and it has so much nutrition, it counterbalances the high acidic protein diet that they lived on. And the sweetener of choice was stevia, honey leaf. And they also used more stevia in medicinal batches of some of their herbs when they would use pau d'arco with South American licorice pepper, which is very cleansing to the colon and releasing. They use it for colds and flus. And then they'll add in yerba mate as a catalyst, just a small amount to a large dose of pau d'arco to potentiate the pau d'arco to make it stronger. And then they'd add in a good dose of stevia. And that makes it taste delicious, but they believe stevia had functions to improve digestion and pancreatic functions, which is interesting because stevia has no calories. It has no sugar. It tastes stronger than sugar in its unrefined form, like in a whole leaf stevia. It's maybe 10 times stronger than sugar in its sweetness, but it actually seems to have a beneficial effect in the major organ concerned with the pathway of most sugars, which is the pancreas and insulin response and the beta cells. So stevia is a really interesting herb. I was amazed when I first tried it that I'd not heard of it, that how I, you know, of course I tried the more clear, semi-refined stevias that were available on the market when I first started taking stevia. Amazing how something with such only a few tiny drops can taste so sweet, and you can really doctor up anything. You can take plain milk kefir, and you can just put a few drops of stevia or vanilla stevia. They have flavored stevias that are really good. And you can just put a few drops of that and stir it in, and all of a sudden you have like a custard dessert, like a frozen yogurt from a fast food joint. Amazing. So for people that are really trying to lower the sugar and the carbohydrates, stevia is really an amazing herb. And it's been here, and I think it's been kind of hidden in the dietary herbal supplement section of health food stores. And it's only been since a year now that I guess the FDA has now allowed stevia. Certain stevias that are 95% steviosides, that are the purest ones, are allowed, have been now reclassified as sweeteners. Those companies are not allowed to make any health claims because it's just a sweetener, but it's a great sweetener because, you know, you can make cookies, like, you know, Uncle Eddie's vegan cookies was one of the binge foods that would tug on me when I was struggling with the BED in the early years. And it's a healthy cookie. They use, you know, whole wheat flour, and they don't use a trans fat oil. It's probably bleached and deodorized. They use cane sugar, so it's an organic sugar. And, you know, chocolate chips, and they're like real chocolate chip cookies. They're really good. But when you make it, if you decided to make it with quinoa flour and with coconut oil, and then like a little Lakanto or xylitol and then stevia to sweeten it, you could actually make a super healthy cookie. And now that you can use stevia legally as a sweetener, you can buy stevia in the store as a sweetener. You could put it in a healthy product that you wanted to release on the market. I made a healthy chocolate for years that I made up at the tonic bar, and we used stevia and xylitol. And it was cacao with no sugar at all that people could do on the BED, or the people who were trying to lower carbohydrates, sugar, or lose weight, or improve diabetes, can make foods without real sugar and use a natural plant sweetener like this and not have to deal with those carbohydrates and those sugars. So stevia is it's a pretty amazing thing. For me, later on working at the tonic bar, I understood practically applying the low sugar principle to the majority of people out there who, for whatever reasons, are having autoimmune stuff, are overweight, have more inflammation, and I know they're eating more of a standard American diet. If I can just get them to lower carbohydrates and sugar, and if I make healthy drinks for them at the bar. And, of course, we don't use any sugar in any form. So I used what I called BED principles with every drink we made at the tonic bar, every drink we designed. So we had to sweeten them with stevia. So we got creative at using flavored stevias in certain amounts in different drinks so that we could make drinks taste good. Because I also found that Ron Teagarden's number one rule, which is compliance, is a very important rule. If you don't make drinks taste good or herbs taste good, no one's going to take them. And if you don't take them, they can't help you. And stevia is a great thing because it kind of breaks the rule book in it. You can make something taste really good. You can, especially if you learn how to disguise it. In the early days, we had some of these stevias that were semi-processed, were more bitter, had a bit more of an aftertaste. So some people really didn't like that. So we had to be careful how much we used, or we had to balance it with another almost zero sugar sweetener like xylitol or Lakanto. But we found a way to do it. If we blended it with raw chocolate or with reishi mushroom, like with the reishi cappuccino, the herbs were so bitter, and a little bit of cinnamon, a little coconut oil, you get a little spicy and sweet. Then we found that the stevia can be masked really well, and we could make a really pleasant drink for someone, and it could have zero carbs, and zero calories from sugars in it. That was really successful, and people that were really busy in a modern lifestyle working in a city to learn a diet change fast. That's the biggest thing that's so difficult. Most people don't have enough time and energy to really get control of their health. Their health is suffering in their lifestyle because how busy their work is and how demanding it is. And so I found I had to try to make things that would have a dramatic effect quickly and then give simple information like just cut down the sugar. Stop eating this, the sweetest things, and replace it with this, some of the healthier versions. And here, try this drink, and I'll sweeten it with stevia. You can buy stevia and have this and keep a little bottle in your purse or take it home or whatever, and use it when you need to sweeten unsweetened things. And it's so important, the beginning weeks of someone that's really trying to make that transition. And from my experience, if they don't make that transition successful in their first attempt, when they're spiritually motivated to do it for all the right reasons, and they find out how hard it is without the help of something like stevia, they're not going to do it. They're going to rebound up and down, or they'll lose faith, and they'll give up on it. And the next time that they try to pick themselves up and say, okay, I'm going to change my diet, and I'm going to lose weight, they're less motivated to do it, and they won't try as hard because they get jaded. And so it's a wonderful tool that we can use today. It's really, really, really interesting how stevia has some of these other benefits. When I was talking about sugar earlier and how the hypothalamus loses the signal of when to say, I'm full, I don't need to eat anymore. There's a popular diet now, a weight loss diet, called the HCG diet, where you take this hormone that women make when they're pregnant, the HCG hormone, and they go off all sugar and carbs, and they promote the use of stevia in this diet, and as the only sweetener on the HCG diet. And people basically lose a pound a day. They have like rapid weight loss, like 40 pounds in 40 days, or 15 pounds in 2 weeks flat. It's all over the internet. It's pretty, you know, it's all the buzz, all the hype. I don't know if I'd ever put a hormone in my body that it's not supposed to be, but people are doing it. But they say they like stevia on the diet because stevia, they believe it actually resets the hypothalamus to regain that pathway to know when the stomach is full. When I've eaten a little bit of food, then it'll get that message, and you'll hit your central nervous system satiety level. So that's just to tell you that I'm fine, I'm full, I've had enough food, I don't need to keep eating. And so I think that's really important to be able to reset that. The last thing I really wanted to say is that, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with natural sugars. I just think it's important to understand the biological and the chemical aspects of the Krebs cycle and ATP and insulin and sugar and carbohydrates and how it's anabolic and how it works in your body. Because insulin is a hormone, and it's like an anabolic steroid, and it's a big part of your jank. And I learned, you know, because I went through long periods of time eating no sugar. And some people believe that can be hard on the brain or the nervous system eventually, because you need a little bit of glucose. Simple sugars for energy is the main fuel. But the body breaks down all food groups eventually to certain other forms of sugar that's the basis of energy for all of life. But it just does it in much different ways and much slower from complex foods. It, you know, sugar is the simplest food. First simplest food group. If you give the body everything, sugar, carbs, protein, fats, it'll take the sugar first. But it goes up and down with the insulin response, and it gets addicted to it. And it loses its jang from eating sugar. Basically, the more you indulge in sugar and carbs, the longer. And you can get away with it when you're young and you got more jang, but you're going to age faster, and you're going to lose your response. You're going to lose your jang, and you're going to gain weight, and it's going to change. And it's not going to affect you the same. And I learned inadvertently through going on extremely low carbohydrates, just like a little quinoa once a week, and no sugar at all. I use stevia for my drinks, and I had healthy oils, healthy proteins, cultured foods, vegetables, non-starchy, exercise. I noticed that it took a little while longer, a little more time to warm up to exercise. But once I got going, that I, as long as I didn't go to 100% stress mode, where then your liver will actually make glucose on the fly. But I could train myself to get up to 90%, like close. I could perform at high levels of physical activity for like extremely long periods of time, like 8 hours straight, and never stop and think about food. My body was like a machine. I didn't need Gatorade, I didn't need anything, because you're not dealing with the up and down insulin response, okay? And then I realized that this was halting the aging process. And because, I mean, there'd be people at the tonic bar that would come in 10 years later. I don't work there now as of the beginning of the new year, but I worked there for about 10 years, exactly, starting with Ron Teagarden days. And then I met David Wolf, and then I left and restarted the bar under Erwin. But during those years, predominantly the whole time, I was no sugar carbs. And people that would come in like 10 years later that hadn't seen me in a long time would basically say, man, you haven't aged like a day since you started doing this. And I'd kind of go, yeah, I think it's because I don't eat sugar and I don't eat carbs. I don't have the glycation. I don't have the cross-linking. I don't have the insulin response. And I've noticed I stay lean and my body performs and exercises at a high level. I got spoiled. I took it for granted. I learned to work at a dynamic level. I learned to play and exercise at a dynamic level. And pretty much feel like Superman. I mean, it really, you have so much energy once you break that fat cycle, that spiral of death, and you get off those sugar and carbs. Now, to flip side that coin, is what I've done to go for that long without sugar and carbs, is I've taken the stress load from the beta cells from pancreas of eating sugar and carbs, taken it off out of the equation of food processing and energy production for my body over an extended period of time. That gives the pancreas and the beta cells a huge rest, okay? And now, if I break that diet, like when I broke it several years later, and I ate like a third of a jar of raw honey straight. I read the raw primal diet. I wanted to start adding a few things new to my diet. I got really excited by Ogenes von der Plein's book. And I came up with this smoothie. It was a base of like 12 ounces of raw milk, a couple ounces of raw cream, half a ripe papaya, like 4 tablespoons of raw honey and 1 raw egg. And you blend this up really good in the blender and it turns into like this orange, custard. It's like thick and it sort of sets and almost develops a thickness on the top if you let it sit too long. And it's super smooth and creamy and it's really good. This is really anabolic, really jangy. And then but the first thing I broke my sugar fast with, because I'd done it for like 3 years straight, was like 4 tablespoons of a raw ginseng honey, YSB Organics raw ginseng honey. Or you've got great honeys at your access, like the Knowing Land honey, amazing minerals. The point being, if you go for an extended period of time off of all sugars and carbs, and you exercise and you get into great shape, and you get past the carb breakdown after a few weeks, where you get weak in the addiction phase, and then you get the high, and then you're flying, and then you regain insulin sensitivity at your peak, okay? Now, your insulin response, your sensitivity, is at max chain level, like a super young person. Now, you can break it. You can intentionally eat some sugar on purpose to get a whopping insulin response, because insulin, when you have a healthy response to it, is like an anabolic steroid, a hormone that makes you feel good, it makes you powerful, it makes you strong.
This program was brought to you by TheBestDayEver.com. Thanks for listening.